This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. It is a Wednesday, and Seth Payne is back. Seth, how did Dalen's knee surgery go? Did it happen this time?
Did it happen?
It was the third time a charm.
Yeah, it is. It's nothing like nothing like mentally preparing your child and actually bringing them to the hospital two times in a row to only have their. It's like somebody on death row that I'll like
just
probably
kidding.
After a while, like if you keep getting a reprieve at the last moment, you're probably like, all right, can we just get on with
give
it?
Give me the needle.
I felt like that's what was happening with Dalen after a while, but they actually went through the execution yesterday.
She got her surgery. Yeah. So she's still alive, but she has a repaired knee now.
Yeah, the surgeon afterwards was explaining it to me, and I was just like, ooh, icky. Okay. It was disgusting. They had to take all kinds of fluid out of their knee, and it was a
for you, deal. It probably just like blended in as white noise as many times as you've gotten news after a knee surgery.
I do think that helped. I think one of the benefits of having had over a dozen orthopedic surgeries is that there's zero nervousness on my part, so I think that translates down to your child.
Ah.
The same way when a coach, Sean, this is one of the things coaches will say is, look, be sure you're not nervous on game day because the work is done. There's nothing left to do but go out and play. And your players, if you're uptight and nervous about things, your players sense that.
Right.
So you always want to be sure you're calm, cool, and collected. And just like, Ted always used to use that analogy about if you're on a bumpy flight, you look at the flight attendants, and if the flight attendants are cool, then, oh, okay, no big deal. If the flight attendants are freaking out, then, suffice to say, as we were driving to the hospital yesterday, I was like, whoa, there's a lot of horror stories about anesthesia gone wrong, let me tell you.
I'm just, the more disturbing image is of me seeing your daughter look at you like a flight attendant. I'm visualizing you as a flight attendant right now, and it's a very disturbing image that makes me want to move along to the Astros.
Did people ever, before we get to the Astros, who flew out to Arizona, when your first wife was pregnant with your children, did you have this weird phenomenon happen to you where people will randomly start telling stories about horrible things that have happened in labor or during pregnancy?
Yes. Yeah.
It's like some compulsion people have.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they, and oftentimes it's their story. And I think it oftentimes shows that people can be fairly narcissistic. You know, like, hey, look, there's a pregnant woman. I'm going to tell the story about our horrible pregnancy as a couple.
Yeah.
Boy, this should get really them very excited. Yeah. Yeah.
And then enjoy 18 years of worrying and fretting over your child after that as well, by the way.
Right. Yo, 18. It just stops. Mine are in their 20s now. The worry has not ceased.
Just no, in my plan, in my 20-year plan, it all stops at 18.
It does.
Are you fretting less about Jose Altuve?
Yes. Yes. Okay. The home run helped. It absolutely helped. Now, I think he wound up going 1-for-5. That was, but yes, that was good to see. That made me breathe a little bit easier last
night. And that's where I was keenly interested in what your opinion would be about whether Jose Altuve is still firmly in the circle of trust or not, because it was great to see that home run early, but he was 1-for-5, and if you look at just obviously his performance so far, he's not himself. He looked more like himself last night, but he's not himself. I feel, Sean, like me trying to take him out of the circle of trust actually is what sparked that home run, and what he needs is another dose of being out of the circle of trust.
Okay, so we'll come Monday, we will find out. So let's see how he does the rest of this week. But Seth, yesterday, for the Astros, it was the best of times and the worst of times. They won yesterday. It was great seeing Christian Javier do his thing, and he didn't win that first game against the Dodgers, so it was his first win in the major leagues, but he's had two really, really good starts now. To me, the bigger news for the Astros, not the game last night necessarily, because that's just one out of 60, this Roberto Osuna thing just continues – a longstanding tradition of about every two or three days, the Astros seemingly losing somebody for the season, it feels like, or for a long time. Roberto Osuna, according to Mark Berman, season-ending Tommy John surgery coming up. So.
Which, as far as, did he get a second opinion, Dad? He was going to get a second opinion. I don't know if there's a whole lot of opinioning to do on a Tommy John.
Yeah, I don't know either. Here is Dusty when Mark Berman pressed him on it in the pregame Zoom press conference.
Dusty, is there anything else you can further comment on about what's going on with Roberto, how bad the situation is, and how you're looking at your closer situation going forward?
No, I can't report anything else until we get the results. You know, I've heard the speculation out there. A lot of people think they're doctors. But we have to wait until we hear from the doctor.
I don't think a lot of people think they're doctors as much as there are writers who talk to people who know stuff.
Right.
And that's what they're saying, both about Verlander and Osuna now. This has been a strange turn of events, Sean. This doesn't typically happen on sports teams where two pitchers will be reportedly out for the season and the pitchers and or the team themselves deny it. Those are pretty extreme things. Right?
Yeah.
Usually there might be a report that, oh, boy, this could be serious. So I don't know if the Astros are pulling some PR thing or if it's just some weird coincidence or what have you. I'm not comfortable with it just because I'd like to know. I'd like to know whether I should grieve for the 2020 Justin Verlander season and then have confused feelings about Roberto Osuna like I always do.
Well, as you know, right? You know, he's a complex – even with a working right arm, he is a complex person to root for. I do – you bring up Verlander, and I do wonder, just in the reporting of these two, we know the Verlander report was Chandler Rome saying Verlander out for this season. And doubling down on it, out for the season. No report on 2021. No mention of Tommy John surgery. Just a mention of elbow issues and issues with his right arm. This Osuna report is a report by Berman that he is going to get season-ending Tommy John surgery. And I think Berman is, you know, Berman's one of the best. So I choose to believe that he's getting this from good sources here. So it does make me wonder, as you know, Seth, my bigger concern with Verlander is not 2020, it's 2021. You know, if Verlander's out for this year, then he's out for this year, and it's a short year, and it's a wonky year, and you hope that somebody picks up the slack, and in this weird season where 16 teams make the playoffs, maybe the Astros win the division, catch fire, and they do some good things. Greinke turns into Greinke, McCullers is what we think he can be, and they find somebody else, maybe it's Javier like he was last night, and you make a run. Who knows? The Yankees and Dodgers both look really, really good right now. But my bigger concern is 2021 with Verlander, because if Verlander's out for 2021, then the window is over for this team.
Right.
And that's
that would be. I mean, yeah, Tommy John is 18 months.
Yeah.
That's what it is, and he's done.
He's done. I'm grasping for straws when it comes to Verlander, but damn, there is so much injury news and so many injury issues with this pitching staff. I'm trying to extract a sliver of hope that Osuna getting reported as Tommy John surgery and Verlander not necessarily being reported as Tommy John surgery maybe is hope that it's not a 2021 deal with Verlander.
Well, there's Verlander, and I guess as far as the sliver of hope, yes, that would be a big sliver of hope. As far as the sliver of hope for this season, one of the weirdest stats in baseball right now is the fact that the Astros bullpen is fifth in ERA,
yeah,
in the good way, like fifth in terms of fifth best ERA,
right,
which is not what you would expect. You'd expect a team with almost all rookies on their relief staff to have one of the worst ERAs in baseball so far. I guess just the question is, how long can they sustain that? And if I would expect that's gonna fall a little bit as you start to get a book on some of these guys, as some of them start to just not have the beginner's luck or whatever it might be. Could they sustain that and remain at least an average bullpen? I feel like yes at this point. I feel like I've seen enough of some of these young guys, and there's enough promise and potential starting ability out of some of these guys that we might be all right there.
That may be where the 60-game season benefits the Astros. You know what I mean? By the time other teams would be getting a book on some of these relievers, it's the middle of October, that sort of thing. As opposed to 162-game season, you get a bigger sample built up, that sort of thing.
And by the way, that's a 1.99 ERA out of your relievers, and Osuna is actually raising that up because he's at a 2.63 right now.
Yeah, well, and Osuna's been he's been banged up. He's going to miss the rest of the season. He's going to undergo Tommy John, according to Mark Berman. And Presley's been banged up too. So you've compiled that ERA with your two best relievers, really not contributing what you expected them to contribute coming into the season. So good news for the Astros. They win last night. Real quick, the Rockets lose last night. I guess that's going to be this Rockets team. The Rockets not only lose, Seth, but the Milwaukee Bucks lose to the Brooklyn Nets, which makes that Milwaukee win feel not quite as monumental from Sunday night.
Well, and it was the Rockets' loss in a way where, okay. Did they show up and try? No, they didn't, so they lost.
Right.
Like, I'm tired of that being the story of whether they won it. You could really almost just say, like, did it look like they tried hard at some point? No? Okay, well, then they definitely lost. They can't just show up when they're the smallest team in basketball since the year 1837. You got to run. You got to create turnovers.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that last
night. Nope, they didn't. They lose to the Blazers last night in the bubble. All right, the NFL has laid out the roster rules for the season. I think Seth needs to get into football shape. We'll explain next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It's Payne and Pendergast with you. Seth is back in the saddle. Big thanks to Wade Smith yesterday for coming in and pinch hitting for Seth. So the NFL finally got their side letter done, Seth. Apparently, according to I think it was Florio who had an article on this yesterday. I don't remember exactly where I saw this, but there was an article about how when both sides seem to agree to everything enough to where players could go start getting COVID tested and get in the building, and the two sides are like, yeah, we agree verbally. We'll get all the written stuff nailed down over the next few days, but let's get in the building and start, you know, working out and whatnot. Is it the owners tried to walk back some of the things that they'd agreed to verbally with the players?
Of course they did, didn't they then? Yeah. Man, this is the problem. The problem with the ownership in the NFL is that you've got 32 billionaires like trying to walk in locks. 32 people who, like, by and large, either made a go of it in their lives by pretty much doing whatever the hell damn well they wanted to do. And, you know, well, by getting consensus from their employees and everything along the way. Or people who are raised up incredibly fantastically rich and are accustomed to getting what they want. So you try to get all 32 of those feral cats to agree on something, it gets tough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why the NFLPA is so adamant that they don't believe anything until it's in writing. And even then, they don't quite believe it because the NFL owners have a history of kind of trying to hide money here and pull some of your money over there.
What do you mean that $500,000 over there?
$500 million. Yeah, $500 million. Oh, yeah, there's $700 million that we were supposed to pay you. Sorry about that. Oopsies.
Ultimate Southern Belle, right?
Wow. I didn't realize that just because the contract specifically said that half that money was yours, that you would be calling upon me to try to collect that money.
So true. Opt-out deadline is Thursday. That's tomorrow at 3 p.m. our time. So we've seen a few more players opt out. Once like half the Patriots roster decided to opt out, it slowed down to just a dull trickle at this point. I feel like there's like one every couple hours that get tweeted out. So there were 40. The number was 40 yesterday during the show, Seth. I probably saw about a half dozen more during the day yesterday that decided to opt out. When it's all said and done, by the time the Thursday deadline rolls around, we're probably looking at under 100 players total that will have opted out of this thing easily. Yeah. Probably under 75, maybe. I mean, it was at 40 yesterday. There's a few more. It's probably near 50 now. So Thursday, 3 p.m. Central Time. And most of them have been because of medical issues, either with themselves or with a loved one. You know, my wife's pregnant, or my grandmother has cancer, or stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that for any of the hand-wringing over whether there would just be masses and masses of people opting out, I was never all that worried about that, even if a bunch of players did opt out, just because the NFL and Major League Baseball have both been through this before, and to a much larger degree through World War II, which was, at that point, you were playing with just guys off of semi-pro teams, sandlot teams. You know, the Steelers were signing guys just basically out of the factory to go play for the Pittsburgh Steelers during World War II. And that's obviously a different reason and different circumstance. But the games went on.
Right.
So as long as as long as it wasn't specifically a COVID safety concern in terms of the league shutting down, I wasn't worried about there being a supply of players.
Yeah.
There's going to be plenty of players no matter what happens. The biggest threat is if the government or the league itself just says, all right, this is unsafe, we're going to shut everything down.
Now, Seth, I just want you to know I love doing the show with you, and I would never bring this up to try to dissuade you from doing the show with me any longer. I've had a really good time doing this with you for over a year, but I would be remiss as a friend not to bring up a potential opportunity for you to maybe make a little more money here.
Ooh, what's this?
Well, there's been a disproportionate number of defensive linemen who have opted out. Okay, that's number one.
It's because we're savvy, Sean. We got survival
you're fat.
Skills.
It's because it's right. It's because of BMI. Three small letters BMI, body mass index. That's what it is.
He's not fat.
He's big.
BMI doesn't apply to athletically large people, Sean.
The coronavirus does not know that there's a BMI rule. It just knows that these are fat people that we can attack easier than we can attack the thin people. So at any rate, whether that BMI is the reason or not, there has been a disproportionate number of defensive linemen to opt out, which means there are a disproportionate number of defensive linemen jobs open. And you're probably saying, well, Sean, it's been a while. I'm a lot lighter than I was. I have to put on weight. I've had a bunch of surgeries. I'm in my mid-40s now, so on and so forth. I get it. But there is now a way that you can ease back into getting into the league on a comeback, Seth. The practice squad for NFL teams is not only going to be expanded to 16 players, but six of those players don't have to have the practice squad rules apply to them. They can be veterans. You can be in the league for 10 years and you can be on the practice squad.
That's for this year. I don't think my age or 50 pounds that I need to gain is as much an issue, Sean, as the fact that I would continue to do my job, which means that every morning I would be bringing you hot takes about which offensive linemen suck, which guys are really good. You know, I don't think O'Brien, as much as O'Brien just flat out loves getting clicks and press, we know that. Woo, boy, does he love the media. I don't think that he's willing to embrace it to that degree. I could come in the morning, I'd be doing it from a Comrex unit down the hall. Like, so Seth, how you feeling about the Texans today? Look, Sean, sources tell me that Max Sharping got his ass kicked by an old man in one-on-one pass rush.
Well, how do you know? I am that old man. That would be the ultimate story topper, right? Because I'm pretty excited that starting next week, there may be times during the show next week that I have to leave in the middle of the show to go get COVID tested, to go to practice.
Yeah.
And it feels kind of cool, right? It feels like a pretty exclusive club. That would be a pretty good flex by you if you're like, yeah, Sean, you know how you were leaving to go get COVID tested? I'm leaving to go play NFL football in the middle of the show. Yeah.
Oh, God, that would be so – just honestly, the thought of that. Everybody listening right now, anybody that's older than in your 20s, just really, really think about for a moment going back and doing doubles, two-a-days, or some of you poor bastards did three-a-days. And just think about how your knees used to feel and your shins and everything. And then just go out there in this heat. And just really, I know you think you missed the game. I don't think you're really thinking it through. If you really think it through, you don't actually miss it all that much. You might miss playing in the games. You might miss the parties after the games and everything. But you don't miss this time of year.
No. The NFL level, the pay is pretty good, though. I would say maybe 17 times a year you miss the game. Like those Tuesdays when the checks come in.
Trying to jump out there at this point, it would feel like, hey, Seth, I'll give you $100,000 if you let me smash your knees with a sledgehammer. Are you up for it? I'm like, I got to say no.
No, I'm good. I don't need it that bad. How much do you think Belichick is going to exploit this rule, Seth? Unlimited returns from the injured reserve list after just 3 weeks.
Oh, it's not just the COVID list. It's the IR.
It's the IR, yeah.
Oh, that's huge. I misread that. Okay, that's a big deal.
According to Pelissero, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not even abusing it, I suppose. That's just jockeying. This is going to benefit some of the craftier coaches in the league. Mm-hmm. And as we know, nobody's craftier than Belichick. I don't know how much it's going to help him this year, though.
Yeah.
The Patriots, what's the over-under on the Patriots right now?
That's a good question. You know what? I'll look it up during the break. That's a good question, because when Cam signed with the team, it went up by like a half a win or a win.
Yeah.
And then none of the guys that left would be enough. Even Dante Hightower, who's their defensive captain, wouldn't be enough to move their season win total at all, really.
by themselves.
By themselves, but when you get a cluster of guys like that, there will be a cumulative. I'll look it up during the break. That's my commitment to you and the listeners. All right. Off and running on a Wednesday here on Payne and Pendergast. Randall Cobb, Texans wide receiver, met with the media yesterday, and he exposed one concern that Deshaun Watson actually also expressed earlier this week. Could there be problems for the Texans offensively early in the season? That's next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with all of you. Seth, I did the research during the break, and the New England Patriots season win total right now is 9. Wins, yeah.
I would have said 8.5.
Yeah,
I look at Bill Belichick's career losing record when he doesn't have Tom Brady as his quarterback, and I say, okay, what do you got here for me, buddy? I don't see Matt Castle walking through that door.
No, he's disguised as Cam Newton, and it feels like a 500 team, honestly. Like, I don't see a team with Cam Newton, assuming he's healthy, at quarterback, and Bill Belichick as a coach bottoming out necessarily. You know
right.
what I mean?
Well, you know, the funny thing is,
not in that division.
Even the advanced stat heads will tell you, or especially the advanced stat heads will tell you, look, predicting greatness from NFL defense 2 years in a row, it doesn't usually happen. Usually, like, an extremely good defense might be good the next year, but they're not going to be extremely good two years in a row. And yet, I think because of the Patriots secondary and because of their respect for Belichick, I see all these intelligent people say, like, well, that defense is going to be the best in the NFL. I'm like, man, they lost a lot of really talented defensive players off that team. It's not as simple as, like, well, Belichick will scheme them up and there you go. They lost a bunch of players already, and then they lost Dante Hightower. And then, like, regardless of what happens with Cam Newton, one of the biggest losses they had is Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach. The last time the Patriots lost Dante Scarnecchia for a couple seasons and they had to go with Dave DeGuglielmo, they sucked. The offensive line went from being one of the best to one of the worst. Then Scarnecchia comes back, and they're one of the best again. So there are a whole lot of issues above and beyond the loss of Tom Brady right now for the Patriots.
Their right tackle was one of the ones who opted out, Marcus Cannon. So there's that on the offensive line as well. Just looking at that division real quick, and then we'll get to Deshaun Watson and Randall Cobb. The Bills also 9 wins, although I feel like the Bills are the favorite in that division right now, slight favorite. The Jets, 7 wins are their total. Tell you the one that I like in that division, Seth. I like the over on Miami, 6.5 wins. I think Miami's going to be frisky this year. I think they made some moves. They won 5 games last year with Fitzy at quarterback. I think Brian Flores showed in his first year. He's a pretty good head coach. Even though they were 5-11, that was a team that was supposed to be 1-15, and he pulled them out of a nosedive at the beginning of the year to where they were trying at the end of the year. They beat the Patriots in Foxborough when the Patriots had a bye to play for at the end of the year. I think he's a pretty good head coach. I think they had a pretty good draft, and I don't know if Tua is going to wind up starting or not, but they did some things in free agency, and that's not a great division. You know, there's no world beaters in that division. I like Dolphins over 6.5, man.
I'd be nervous about Tua just because I feel like he should be perpetually in the high-risk category.
Yeah.
Since he's always either on the way to the hospital or on the way home from a hospital or something.
Fitzy.
Or some kind of malady.
Fitzy, baby. Fitzy.
That's where it gets dicey with a team like the Patriots is, for one, they've already shown a commitment to, like, they'll go for it and they'll try to tank, but then they'll botch the tanking.
Yeah.
So by signing Fitzpatrick, I was saying that from the moment they signed Fitzpatrick.
You did.
If you're trying to, I was on that, like, right from the get go. Why would you sign Fitzy if you're trying to tank? Because he's gonna win some games for you. He'll lose some, but he'll win half of your games. And in a good year, he'll actually do better than that. But so at what point in the season do they decide to go with Tua? And is it because they're struggling as a team or because they feel like it's time to get the young guy in there?
Yeah.
I think they'll win more games with Fitzpatrick than they would with Tua just in this initial year. I like Tua as a long-term prospect, but he's a rookie.
Yeah, he's right. He's a rookie in a pandemic. And that's going to be – I think Burrow is going to be the only one of those rookies that starts week one at the quarterback position. They've already anointed him in Cincinnati. The Texans season win total, Seth, is 7.5, according to Odd Shark. And I tell you what, I mean, I know the Texans have a lot of question marks. We're going to learn more about those today. The coaches are all meeting with the media today. So I think people are very anxious to hear what Anthony Weaver has to say about the defense. We'll see. Tim Kelly has never been necessarily somebody who wows people at the podium, but as a first-time play caller, I'll be interested to see if he's got anything interesting to say about this offseason. Because Deshaun had a lot of interesting things to say about Tim Kelly over the weekend and the one-on-one time that he's getting with his play caller now. But he has not had a lot of face time with his receivers. We know we've seen the videos of him working out in different parts of the country with Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb met with the media yesterday. Before we get to Cobb, here is Watson from over the weekend on building chemistry with his new weapons.
Yeah, I've worked out with him a couple of times over the summer. We've kind of been making sure that we're, you know, picking the right time to work out and doing the right things and taking the precautions that we need to make sure that everyone is staying safe. You know, they have, you know, everyone have a family, you know, they have kids and a wife. And so, you know, making sure that they're staying safe, that their wife and the kids are, you know, making sure that they're on the same page of what we're doing and what we're working out and who we've been around and checking temperature and things like that, staying sanitized. So, yeah, it's been good the times we've been working out, but it's also been difficult and kind of, you know, nerve wracking because we haven't been able to work out as much as, you know, we wanted to. But at the same time, you know, we've been FaceTime testing, doing a lot of mental work. So whenever they came in, they were ready and prepared.
Okay, so that's Deshaun. About as cool a customer as you can find, expressing a little bit of nervousness there at the end that they haven't had a chance to work out as much as they normally would, not even close. Randall Cobb yesterday actually quantified the lack of FaceTime, that they literal FaceTime, that they've gotten with each other, the receivers and their star quarterback. Here is Cobb yesterday on building chemistry with Deshaun Watson.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, off-season program, we probably would have thrown 3 or 4 times a week for 6 or 7 weeks. So you're looking about, you know, 25 to 30 opportunities to communicate, to go through routes and timing and get a sense. He would be able to get a sense for the way that my body moves and understanding of how I come out of routes. And I would be able to get understanding of his release, you know, his ball placement and all those things. Obviously, I think we've had maybe 5 to 7 opportunities to throw to each other so far. So it's just the more you do something, the more repetition you have with someone, the more that chemistry grows.
Okay, so they would have been doing it 3 to 4 times a week. I mean, so we're talking a few dozen times they'd have been working out together now, Seth. Randall Cobb says they've worked out 5 to 7 times at this point. How big? I mean, I love numbers. Those numbers sound a little scary. As someone who's never thrown a football before with professional football players and professional receivers and done what they do, all I can go by is just anecdotally how that sounds. Like, holy crap, they've only gotten to work out together tossing a football. And these are new weapons for Deshaun. Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, guys that you need to build timing with and chemistry and things like that. They've basically had a chance to work out about 15% of the time that they normally would up to this point of the year.
Yeah, and that's where I think the ability to kind of to talk and learn the same vocabulary and learn exactly what each guy is thinking, they'd really have to work at it to replicate anything close to what you can do just by getting rep after rep after rep after rep. You know, you think about Drew Brees. Drew Brees is probably the most religious about getting multiple reps, hundreds and hundreds of reps with the same routes, with the same receivers, to the point where Brees could literally throw the ball with his eyes closed a lot of the time and probably be okay because it's just so ingrained. And you're not going to have that, you know, like you're not going to be able to take it to the next level, but a lot of other teams are dealing with the same thing. I think the big advantage here for Deshaun Watson is that as he's trying to do all of this, he is working with Randall Cobb, who's worked with Aaron Rodgers, you know, and had a great relationship, especially in the scramble drill part of the game with him. He's working with Brandon Cooks, who's had that relationship with Drew Brees and Tom Brady. He's not just working with veteran receivers, but working with veteran receivers who understand exactly how to have the nonverbal communication with your quarterback. How to be on the same page in terms of how am I going to respond to different coverages? How am I going to adjust this route? And those are conversations you can have. Nothing replicates actually doing it in person. But I think that they're going to be able to do a much better job of it than if Deshaun was just out there with some random veteran guys that hadn't necessarily played with quarterbacks who play the game at a higher level.
Yeah.
So I'm not on the fence here. I mean, I'm nervous about him. I'm nervous about Deshaun having to play with all these new weapons without a whole bunch of practice time. But if this is the situation you have to have, I really do feel like Cooks and Cobb are probably among the most ideal to be in that position.
That's a good point, because they've had off seasons where they've brought in kind of, you know, just sort of 1 or 2 year stopgap guys at wide receiver, and it hasn't been as prolific. So I'm with you on that. Cobb, Cooks, Kenny still here after a year in the system. He's not arriving in week one like Laremy Tunsil was last year, you know, and having, you know, Carlos Hyde talked about that. They all arrived basically the same day, literally. And so a lot of these guys on offense, Seth, last year were just going week to week with whatever the game plan was and had never been able to fully immerse themselves in the playbook. So I think for a guy like Stills, that'll manifest itself as well. So
yeah, because even if you go back to that Saints game at the beginning of the season, you know, there were times where Duke Johnson, you could tell that in pass protection, for instance, Duke Johnson wasn't quite comfortable yet, because it can get super complex. Like, the challenge for a running back in pass protection is much more mental than it is physical. The physical side of it is you just cut block, you get in the guy's way for the most part, and the quarterback will try to get rid of it. And Duke Johnson, I thought, did a pretty good job of it, but there were a little few moments where you could tell that the communication wasn't quite there. I think that you run the risk of having those kinds of little issues multiplied if you don't have veteran guys in there. So the new guys are all veteran guys that flat out know what the heck they're doing. And I think because it's all mental work at this point, it's not going to be like a train wreck or a disaster out there the same way it would be if, like, the first year the Texans were in existence, we had 6 rookies starting on offense.
Right.
We had twice as many practices as anybody else in the league. We still don't know what the hell
didn't
we were
matter.
Doing. We had so many rookies out there, yeah.
Didn't matter. Here's Randall Cobb along those lines on where he can help Deshaun Watson.
I think it's talking through blitz pickups and understanding the hots and being on the same page with those. It's understanding the coverages and the way certain teams play the coverages and finding those holes and being able to fill those voids. You know, I think that I've, over the time, gotten a pretty good rapport with my quarterback, just being able to talk through those situations, having a little bit of a quarterback in my background myself and understanding that it's not always about getting open, but getting open at the right time. So, you know, understanding where you are in a progression as a receiver. And that's, you know, some of the things that I want to make sure that I'm letting the young guys in our room know.
Yeah, back in the day, Randall Cobb was a quarterback a long, long time ago. That I would imagine that, you know, being able to put yourself in the shoes of the guy calling the signals. And this is, Seth, as you've pointed out, this is the first time that the Texans have a real, you know, a card-carrying slot receiver playing slot receiver.
It's the first time Deshaun has had it, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there are other guys that have been pretty good slots that O'Brien has brought through, or guys that could play in that capacity. But right, this is Deshaun's own veteran slot receiver. And I think the other thing about Randall Cobb that I wish they had more time to actually be physically on the field together, but that I still think is going to be an improvement, is when Randall Cobb was in Green Bay, you know, people used to talk about their scramble drill rules. When the play breaks down, what are you doing? And everybody has rules. There's kind of standard rules that receivers follow. But I'd always heard that in Green Bay, they took it to the next level and beyond, that it was just this very, very intricate set of exactly how you respond in various situations when the play breaks down. And man, if they can get to an elevated level of that with Deshaun, to where his receivers really are just operating on a different plane, that could be really, really cool for Deshaun.
Yes.
Because obviously we know what he's capable of doing. If you increase that or improve on that, that's pretty good.
Trying to think of a quarterback, Seth, in the league that it's considered maybe not elite, but that's considered a very capable starting quarterback, that is considered by their team to be somebody that can handle a lot, that has more to handle coming into this season than Deshaun Watson. Like, which quarterback? I'm not talking about guys that are already perpetually overwhelmed, where you go, well, they have a lot on their plate and they're not going to be able to handle it just because they're not very good or they're still really young, whatever the case may be. Like, Deshaun is thought to be a guy who is a top 5 to 7 quarterback in the league. Guys that are at that level, I don't know that a team with a good to great quarterback is asking more of their good to great quarterback than the Texans are asking of Deshaun Watson. Some of it is out of their hands. Like, Bill O'Brien didn't know that there was a pandemic coming, so there's nothing you can do about that. But you add that into the fact that you traded his best receiver. His next two best receivers now alongside Will Fuller are brand new. Will Fuller, you don't know if he's going to be on the field week to week. You got him a new running back as well in David Johnson. You've got the contract thing hanging over his head as well, just as sort of a variable injected into the. I think Deshaun's going to be able to compartmentalize that just fine. But we'd be remiss not to mention that he's in the middle of contract negotiations. You have a defense that did not pick up Deshaun last year. You had a defense that Deshaun needed to drag along with him just to win 10 games. I look at Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, even Brady going to Tampa Bay with all these new teammates. Man, look at the weapons he's got, and he's got Bruce Arians, who's done some things. I don't know that any quarterback that's considered to be a good to great quarterback in the NFL is being asked to do more this season than Deshaun Watson.
You know why you can't think of it? Because it's become just the standard thing they do every single year. Yeah. The guy we were just talking about, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. And I think that's the danger. Look at Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's Davante Adams and then a bunch of guys that are 3 years in the league or less. You know, Devin Funchess, maybe if he would have done something, I suppose, but nobody was really expecting.
He opted out.
Yeah. So I think that's the opposite situation. And that's where I'll give O'Brien credit for kind of addressing that and not leaving, despite the fact that you traded away DeAndre Hopkins, and no matter how anybody feels about that, it's not like O'Brien has abandoned Deshaun and left him like Aaron Rodgers has been for a long time. They haven't drafted a skill position player since Aaron Rodgers was drafted, and he's left to do that every year. And I think we're getting to that point in Aaron Rodgers' career, right, where despite him winning a Super Bowl, it kind of feels like Barring some really good seasons here, I feel like Aaron Rodgers is always going to feel like he didn't reach his full potential. And part of that is not his fault. It's just that they haven't really done a great job of continuing that support with the skill position players the way he had earlier in his career.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think this goes back to something we've said about O'Brien. You mentioned the Hopkins trade. Most of us disagree with the trade. Most of us would have liked to have seen them ride it out with DeAndre Hopkins, at least get into the staring contest with him over his contract to see if you could call his bluff, to see if he would actually stay away from the building and absorb big six-figure fines to make his point and get a longer-term deal. But I do think that O'Brien is doing things that he feels are in the best interest of Deshaun Watson. I think he feels that the DeAndre Hopkins deal, that when you factor in the contract as well and wanting to pay Deshaun, and then going and getting weapons that he feels are going to be on the field with Deshaun to practice, that are veteran weapons, that are going to acclimate pretty easily, that are going to be able to maybe address some things with this offense, a lack of depth and speed wide receivers. You know, Cooks sort of addresses. Cooks is a good Will Fuller insurance policy. I'd say Will Fuller insurance policy. Cooks is a really good NFL wide receiver. But you have a pretty good feel now that it's not Your whole ability to stretch a defense is not reliant on one guy who could have a quad injury one quarter into a game and then be out for 3 weeks. You know, you've got multiple guys like that. And I don't think you can look at the moves O'Brien's made on the offensive line, both in the draft and with these trades, and say that he doesn't feel like he has Deshaun's best interest at heart. Now, it may not work out. You know, they may win six games. They may be – Vegas may have it right. They might be 7-9 this year, in which case – it will not have worked out that they've done things in the best interest of Deshaun Watson because the results won't be there. But I think the intent is there. I think my biggest thing, Seth, you know, is this. When they make decisions over there of any sort, always ask yourself, is this in the best interest of Deshaun Watson? Whatever that decision may be, always ask yourself that because he's the most important employee in the building. I do think O'Brien is asking himself that. I just think a lot of people disagree with the answer. But I think he's asking himself that, and I think he's answering in his mind. He's answering in the affirmative. He thinks these things are being done in the best interest of Deshaun Watson.
No, and I think he's – and that's where the whole GM side of it comes in. I think the coach side of him, yes, is totally 100% trying to do it. The question becomes, all right, is the GM doing it in the financially responsible way?
Right.
I'm not going to harp on each specific trade and whether it was worth it or not. But when it comes to a coach making the decisions of a GM, you worry about, all right, are you making decisions impulsively? Are you thinking about the long term, whatever it might be? Look, Titus Howard was a good pick by Brian Gain, in my opinion, one that wasn't popular at the time. They didn't sign Trent Williams, and I don't know whose call that was ultimately, but you could have signed Trent Williams in free agency, paid him less than Laremy Tunsil is making, and still had two extra draft picks around. So that's a Brian Gain / Bill O'Brien combo deal right there that did not go well, in my opinion, from a from a general managership standpoint, but that's just where we are. The coaching side of it and, like, protecting Deshaun and trying to get him as many weapons as possible, yeah, he's trying to do that.
Yeah. It looks like, Seth, if we're to read into social media correctly, that the Texans might have the magic pixie dust of Simone Biles sprinkled on their team this year.
That's boy, that's an interesting way to phrase that. That's so Simone Biles, I get so confused with any of these things that are reported on social media, because this came out a couple days ago. Simone Biles makes it official with new boyfriend, the Texans' Jonathan Owens. So Jonathan Owens, who I believe was just on, I think he was on practice squad all of last year. I don't know if he was elevated to the active roster or not.
I'm not sure. I'll look it up.
And honestly, when I first read it, I thought they were saying that they were engaged, and I'm looking at this and I don't see a ring or anything. But apparently Simone Biles tweeting out a picture of them and just saying it's just us, I guess that these days that's an announcement of a monogamous relationship of some sort. They're boyfriend, girlfriend. This is like him giving her his Letterman's jacket or something.
Yeah, they're Instagram official, I suppose. Yeah. Here's his background with the Texans. On September 30th, 2019, he was signed to the practice squad. He was promoted to the active roster on November 21st, 2019, but was waived 2 days later and re-signed to the practice squad. He signed a reserve futures contract with the Texans on January 13th, 2020.
Okay, so the 2 days. Good for Jonathan
Owens.
What
does he look like? Is he a handsome man?
He's a good looking. Yeah, he's a good looking guy. At least from that picture, he's an attractive man. I don't want to gush too much, but I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, all right, yeah, I get it. Like, how this practice squad player? How did he catch Simone Biles' eye initially? Yeah. She started liking his Instagram post in November of 2019. I'm trying to remember. She was the hometown captain one of the games last year.
Yeah, she was. You and I got our picture taken with her. You looked like Andre the Giant standing next to her.
I think
it was amazing.
Remember, there was a guy standing off to the side of the stage where I was like, all right, this guy's somebody. This guy's got to be like a celebrity or something.
Yes, I remember that guy.
It was like the guy was a good-looking guy, but almost had like that star quality to him or something. But that wouldn't have been Jonathan Owens out before the game. Unless, like, he knows he's probably got more of a future just in, you know, hanging out with Simone Biles.
Yeah.
And maybe being the supportive spouse to her eventually.
Hang on to Simone Biles, Jonathan Owens.
It's
hang
easy.
On
you
to someone.
You can hang on to her and put her under your arm.
I don't mean
like
literally
carry like
hang
a duffel
on
bag.
To I don't
yeah.
mean like a like Samsonite briefcase. Yeah, yeah, no. I mean like figuratively. But
I think that was somebody different. Somebody said, I was like, is this guy like a celebrity or something? And somebody, I think that was a publicist or something.
I was going to say that could have been a PR guy, yeah.
Yeah, so Jonathan Owens, I wonder if that's when he met. Boy, how did he shoot his shot? If Simone Biles was there and maybe she saw the team for a little bit or something.
Maybe a charity event where there's, you know, these charity events where like 15 Texans show up.
Yeah.
And like seven of them are guys that are on the practice squad thinking like, if I go to this charity event, maybe they'll bump me up to the 53-man roster at some point because I'm smart, tough, and dependable.
Let's see. Oh, it was in December 26th or so is when she was the home field advantage captain this year. So that was the last regular
season
game.
Boy, the weather was beautiful that day. You and I are wearing short sleeve shirts in that picture.
Yeah, so somehow they knew each other already before that day, but maybe that was when they first met in person.
Okay.
I don't know. I want to claim responsibility for this somehow.
Yeah, just claim it and then let them say no. You know what I mean? Like, let them come take the claim away from you out of your cold, dead hands.
Yeah.
A reminder, if you want to listen to the show, if you're driving in your car right now, how can I keep listening to these guys? I love this show. The Radio.com app is
a good app.
Awesome. It's a great app. Radio.com, you can rewind the show all the way back 24 hours. The station, I should say, 24 hours back. So if you get in your car at like 6:45 and you're like, I want to listen from the very beginning. I listen to Payne and Pendergast like it's episodic television, like it's Breaking Bad. Some days it is. You can rewind to the very beginning with the Radio.com app. So download it today. Download it as soon as you can stop your car and get to your phone. The Astros bullpen is a five-alarm fire right now. So who is going to put it out? Who is going to be the closer for this team? Dusty Baker sounds a little beaten up telling us who it might be. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.